Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is John Cozy. John, it's always a pleasure to have you back on the program, and I love discussing your latest articles. You wrote an earlier one about trade and the fact that it's not meant to boost economics. And you have a quote saying there was free trade in Africa before the colonialists came. You get into that issue. But I think the article that you sent me this morning is especially appropriate with what's going on now, and you call it the brutality mentality. I love that title. Let's talk about that, especially in the wake of Obama's stomach-upsetting speech last night.
Yeah, before we get into that, Steve, how are you feeling?
I'm doing pretty well. I can't say I'm 100%, but considering all I've been through, I'd say I'm in pretty decent shape. I'm at least 90%, and I can pretty much take care of all the things that I want to do. And at the same time, I'm mindful of the fact that I'm 80 years old, John, so the body doesn't exactly work the way it did many years ago. So I always have to keep that in mind. Even if I was 100%, 80-year-old bodies don't work the same way as younger ones do. And if I forget that, my body reminds me all the time.
Yeah, mine reminds me as soon as I crawl out of bed.
Yeah, exactly. I used to jump out of bed in the morning, almost always beating the alarm clock. Well, often I beat the alarm clock now, but I don't jump out of bed. I get up, I sit on the side of the bed, I just kind of get my bearings a little bit before I even get on my feet, and then I move very slowly to wash up and so on and begin my day, and then I'm off and running. But it's a slow process, unlike years ago when I could move very, very quickly, and I could become awake almost instantly when I woke up and get right into my activities very easily. But I'm afraid those days are gone forever, John.
Yeah. I crawl out of bed. I roll out of bed. I don't crawl out of bed.
Oh, I know what you mean by rolling out of bed. Sometimes I've got a sore here or a sore there, and I position myself when I get into bed, and I position myself when I get out of bed the same way. And again, I guess it's part of the aging process or whatever problems we may have. But to be young again, John.
Yeah.
To be young again with the wisdom of the ages. Wouldn't that be a marvelous combination?
Yeah, as that old Dutch saying goes, too soon old, too late smart.
Exactly right. A wisdom is No, I'm going to mess up that quote, but certainly, when you're young, you simply don't understand the things that you do as you get older. If you take the trouble to find out, I mean, if I go back enough years, I simply didn't comprehend the stuff that I do now. But, of course, then I was concentrating either on my schoolwork way back or on my life's work along the way and family activities and so on, and I wasn't engaged in the writing that I'm doing now in the media work, and for me, this has been a retirement activity. So, and it began at age 70. I never did this before. I knew a little bit, I would say a fair amount, about the things going on, but I never focused on them or researched them on a daily basis the way I do now, let alone write about them and do media work and so on. And this is my life's passion now.
Well, yeah, I guess that's about the only passion I've ever left.
Well, it really keeps me going, John, and when I was unable to do this for over 2 months, aside from the need to regain my health, nothing bothered me more than this. And to turn on a TV set and get Fox or CNN and see the garbage that they put out, I don't know how anybody could recuperate with that kind of stuff on the TV screen.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Half the time I just kept it on mute. I wanted company in my room, so I would have the video on, but most of the time I would have the audio on mute. I might watch something else occasionally. It was either that or the walls or the ceiling. But the big lies that proliferate, not just the 9/11 lies or in relation to Obama's war in the Middle East, but the big lies that proliferate about the U.S. agenda, the imperial agenda, and this just goes on and on and on, along with the Obama bashing, which goes on Fox, because they want Republicans to run the country instead of Democrats, and they know full well that on the big issues, there really isn't a dime's worth of difference between them.
There's just... Just big dollars, that's all.
It's the dollars. I mean, they both support the wars. They both support the corporate interests. They both support the police state apparatus. And they differ on some other things. But the big stuff, they're pretty much in lockstep on. And you'll get it. You'll get it on Fox. You'll get it on CNN. You'll get it on the broadcast, CBS and the others. And, of course, they're only on, I guess, 30 minutes a day. I haven't watched them in so many years, I forget what they're doing, or even who anchors the programs. I remember back in the Walter Cronkite days and the Dan Rather days. I don't know who's doing it now, but the same thing, 30 minutes a day. And now you get Al Jazeera. I get Al Jazeera America, John. I get BBC America. And BBC, of course, owned and operated by the British government. Al Jazeera owned and operated by the Qatar government. So you think you're going to get real news on these operations? Not a chance.
Yeah, well, I mean... Yeah. What could you do? The economic system is geared for the accumulation of money, and we're not accumulating any.
No, we're not. They're taking it from us and giving it to the top 0.1% to let them accumulate it. That's the kind of system we have.
Yep, that's the way it goes.
There was a report on RT International this morning, John. That's one service I get on my cable lineup, but anybody can get them online, RT International. Real news from Moscow, and they have an American operation. They have offices, I believe, in New York and Washington. I think one or two other offices. No office in Chicago. They've had me on a number of times. I haven't been on recently, but they've had me on a number of times. They had a report about... A transatlantic trade agreement that's being negotiated in secret, of course, and one of the things that's going on is a scheme to take Britain's National Health Service, which even though it has been really ripped apart compared to how good it was many years ago, but the idea that's being negotiated by the Cameron government, the Conservative government, is to privatize the whole system and let corporate predators take over and concentrate only on profits and forget about treating people properly.
Yeah, I mean, that trade agreement that you're talking about is what cost me to write that article about trade.
Well, then we have to get into that, too. You want to talk about that a little bit? Then we'll talk
about it. No, it's not a big thing. I just pointed out that trade has been going on for something like three millennia, and the trade agreements were never in existence, so that... trade doesn't depend upon the existence of trade agreements. As a matter of fact, if trade agreements exist, they exist for some other purpose than trade. And what the purpose that they exist for is to control the trading partner rather than to improve trade relations. And the examples were simple. You take Mexico, for instance, the North Atlantic trade agreement caused Mexican farmers to lose their markets, and Mexico now depends on America for basic foodstuffs. Well, you think Mexico's going to oppose anything America does? If its foodstuffs are dependent upon American trade, of course not. America doesn't really care about the little bit of money it makes from selling potatoes to Mexicans who were once farmers. What America cares about is getting Mexico's consent to everything America wants to do. And that's the real purpose of trade agreements, right? And trade.
And, of course, the idea is to increase corporate profits and millions of jobs.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, all that's involved, but the real reason for the trade agreement is to control the policies of the government that you're trading with.
Oh, indeed. Oh, indeed. And, of course, Mexico doesn't have any power compared to the United States.
Yeah, so that's all it was to that paper. People don't seem to realize that, you know, trade has been going on for a long time. You don't need trade agreements to engage in trade. And as the quote on the top of the paper went, there was free trade in Africa until the colonists came. You know, it's true. There was free trade everywhere until the colonists came.
Oh, indeed, John. As long as there's been commerce, there's been trade. And, I mean, it goes back, you mentioned three millennia. My God, I mean, I don't know where the beginning of commerce, at what point commerce began, but when commerce began, certainly trade is very much a part of that. And it's gone on, I guess, virtually forever.
Yeah, you know, and pointed out in the article that, trade has had all sorts of horrid consequences. I mean, the Marco Polo example we have is pretty benign, but the truth of the matter is that slavery was an item of trade. You know, a slave was a tradable item, and it caused slavery around the world. The silver and agricultural products that the conquistadors ran across in Central America became tradable items, and that led to colonialism and exploitation of slavery of peoples. So trade is not a benign thing, and I don't know why economists are dumb enough to think that it is. It's not.
Oh, indeed not, John. And slavery just in the Americas goes back over 500 years.
Well, yeah.
And, of course, the slavery is something that has gone on, which is a form of trade. I guess it's gone on for thousands of years elsewhere.
Well, the major aspect of trading slaves was in the Americas when the British came up with a triangular trade where they would pack ships with English-made goods and sail to West Africa, trade the English-made goods that they had for human beings, and then sail to the Americas. Sell the human beings and load their ships up with American silver and agricultural products and sail back to England. I mean, those English, they're enterprising thieves of the first order, and they have always been so. There's nothing that I know that justifies what the English have done in this way.
I think the Anglo-Saxon tradition thrives in America, John.
Well, that's true, but America started out by trying to be a little England that became a super England.
It sure did, and England was king of the hill at least until World War One. Then it was severely weakened, and American supremacy started rising. And of course, by the end of World War Two, a couple of decades, a generation later, I mean, Britain was a shadow of its former self. The empire was in disarray, and America, unquestionably, has been king of the hill and has been so ever since, to the detriment of everybody around the world.
Yeah, first came the Western European empires, none of which got any following from the people that they colonized, and consequently, when they could no longer afford the arms to keep them. In tow, the people all abandoned the empires as quickly as they could, And the same thing's going to happen to America. America can't continue this nonsense. Obama thinks that bombing ISIS in Iraq and Syria is going to turn the tide. We bombed the hell out of North Vietnam, and it didn't turn any tide. And he doesn't seem to know that. I don't know where that man got educated. Oh, I think it was Harvard.
Yes. And he was a constitutional law professor, I believe, at the University of Chicago.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything about the Constitution.
He knows nothing about the Constitution. That's right.
You can't do anything for a person who won't look at the facts. I mean, he is not about to admit that America military, as strong as it is, as huge as it is, as expensive as it is, hasn't won a war since World War II.
That's exactly right.
I mean, what in the world does he think he's doing? I mean, I don't know. It's just that thing about politicians. It's like an addiction. You get into killing people, and when the killing of people that you've been killing isn't killing enough, you kill some more.
Well, I say all the time, John, that that permanent war is official U.S. policy, and it is, because America literally is at war every single year, every single month, every single week, every single day, and you could go back as far as you want to in U.S. history, and it's always been this way, either internal wars against America's native people or wars abroad, and the internal wars continue against disadvantaged people, people of color. I mean, look at Ferguson, Missouri. I mean, it continue on a national level, on a state level, on a local level. So literally, I mean, there's a war going on all the time. And America has a police state apparatus. And Obama, on the eve of 9/11, announced that he will wage open-ended permanent war in the Middle East.
Well, you know, that was the point of the paper I sent you this morning, or last night, actually, but...
The brutality mentality.
The end of the paper is, you know, the war to end all wars is the war without end. I mean, that's exactly what happens, because, you know, I was trying to make a point which I don't think anybody has ever tried to make. I mean, I remember at college people used to talk about the world being a battleground between good and evil, between good and evil, between good and evil. And it occurred to me some time ago that, hey, that's nonsense. There is no good in that war. The war against good and evil has no good army. I mean, it's one evil group against another evil group.
John, I agree with you 100%. I may be wrong on this, but I think it was Benjamin Franklin who once said, there's no such thing as a good war or a bad peace.
Yeah, but, you know, the point is that, you know, fight this war over and over. We've been fighting it since the dawn of human history. You know, no matter what the outcome is, no good comes of it. Why? Because there's no good involved in it. I know. I used a little bit of rhetoric. I said that, you know, nothing's going to change. Decades from now, things will be just the same. And mothers will lament that the fruit of their wombs is caught cannon fodder. But, you know, and that's true. I mean, that's what they're going to do. They're going to give birth to cannon fodder, which they will send off to war, and who will come back in boxes, and they'll bury them in hallowed ground, you know, in reserved cemeteries, and that'll be, you know, the end of it.
Or they come back alive, John, with shattered minds and bodies,
you know,
and nobody gives a damn about them.
I didn't want to muck up the paper too much with that kind of stuff.
No, there's so much you can get into, but the so-called fix of the VA is really a terror. It's not a fix at all. all. It's just kind of papering over all the problems at the VA. And these young kids that go into the military, and so many of them only do it because the economy is so bad, they can't find a job, and they get sold a bill of goods that really is a pack of lies about all the benefits they'll get from the military. And the only thing they get, again, shattered bodies and minds, so many of them, when they come home, and they just dump. Nobody gives a damn about them. The money isn't spent to help them, and they're on their own. There are many vets who end up as homeless people on the streets, and it's a horrible situation. I've been to the VA. I see the way the VA works. I'm a veteran myself, 1950s. I wasn't in a war, but I've seen the kind of people that go into the VA and the kind of people that work there. It really is a disgrace. And it's not going to get any better based on what the plans are to fix it. The only way to fix the VA, John, is to end these damn wars.
Well, yes, that's one way to fix the VA. But, the problems with the VA are the same problems we have with anything else that the Congress creates. This so-called loyal opposition, I don't know whether it's Democrat or Republican, in power at any moment, in the opposition at any moment, when they realize that something is going to pass, something is going to become law, if they disagree with it, they realize that they can't stop it. So what they do is amend it so that it cannot work effectively, and then that's what gets created. Something gets created, supposedly to do some good, but created in such a way that it cannot possibly work effectively, and consequently, it's a big boondoggle from that point on.
John, other times they pass a law and they simply don't implement it.
Well, but even if they implement it, I mean, you know, I don't care what it is you take. Take Social Security, for instance. It's a great program. It helps a lot of people do a lot of things, including me, and you.
Yes,
but,
indeed.
But it was when it was put together, it was inadequately funded. People, you know, the Republicans in the Congress and even many of the Democrats who advocated it insisted that it had to be funded by employee contributions, which is wonderful if the economy is doing well. But the minute the economy isn't doing well, those contributions fail to materialize, and then the program gets into trouble. And then they start talking about altering the program by extending the age limits, or having reduced cost of living increases or whatever. They start mucking around with it instead of doing what they ought to do, namely come up with a better way of funding the damn program. But that's not what they're going to do. They don't want to fund the program. And the same thing. It's true about the Obama health care law. I mean, yeah, it gave a lot of people who didn't have access to insurance. That it did, okay? And that helps those people, okay? But the real problem with medicine in America is it can't be afforded by Americans.
Exactly.
The reason is cost. And what did he do about trying to reduce the cost of medical care? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He just made it possible for a few people who couldn't get insurance to get insurance. It's still going to be outlandishly costly. The program can't possibly work for any length of time before the American people realize that they can't even afford insurance with subsidies.
And, John, even the subsidies will provide insurance. It's way less than what people need if they have catastrophic illnesses, serious illnesses that involve very, very heavy costs. It's one thing to become ill and have your expenses paid for. It's another thing entirely to have a major health problem that runs into terrible expenses. The cost of health care today is absolutely outrageous.
I'll tell you how outrageous it is. You know, last year I had heart bypass surgery in a small town a hospital, you know, no big facility with massive equipment and that sort of thing. You know what the original bill that went to the insurance company was? More than $500,000.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's a lot more than the bills I saw, John.
Yeah, that's what it was, more than $500,000 for that operation. You know what the insurance company paid him? Less than $10,000, and they accepted it.
Mm-hmm. How can they charge it? How can they charge an amount that much?
I mean, they just charge it. I mean, the whole damn thing is the biggest racket in the world.
Oh, it's a racket. It's a racket. I was hospitalized for 2 weeks, and I know my costs exceeded $50,000. The bills keep coming in different tranches. You know, you get a general hospital bill,
yeah,
and you get a lab bill.
Yeah, somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, you get a bill for the gauze and Band-Aids that you use, you know, $10 a Band-Aid or something or other. And the bills keep coming in, John.
Yeah, I know. I got bills from doctors I'd never even recognize their names.
I wrote an article several years ago comparing the cost of health care today with what it was back around the time frame of the 1960s. It's extraordinary how cheap it was then compared to now. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but today, I don't know, a hospital room per day, I don't know what it costs, $1,000 a day or $2,000 a day. And you could go back and the typical cost for a hospitalization for a day in a typical location might be something like $80. And now we're getting into a couple of thousand or more. And, I mean, it really was affordable back then. And when we got Medicare, it was a rotten excuse, but one of the excuses for not providing drug coverage was that drugs were cheap then, so there wasn't a need to do it. I wondered if they felt the same way about dental care. But my notion of health care is the whole package. You don't have some things in and leave other things out. But, of course, drugs can be extremely expensive, depending on the drug. And dental care is much more expensive than it was years ago. See, it's not like open heart surgery, John. But the dental bills, I guess, certainly are not cheap. They're much more expensive than the way they were before. But all this should have been in Medicare from the beginning. I mean, seniors are the ones who need this stuff. Most seniors are not affluent, to say the least, and they need this in this time of life when they don't have employer covered insurance. And if they don't have coverage provided by the government, they're stuck. If they get hit with big bills.
Yeah, you know, yeah, but that's what I was saying. I mean, that's the way government creates programs. They create a program, and they create it in a way that it does a little bit of good, but it can never work efficiently or effectively. And they do it over and over and over. Every program they do is that way. The Pentagon even is done that way. I mean, they'll come up with this program for the Pentagon, you know, with no limit on the amount of money that can be spent without any controls on the vendor. And, you know, and it'll never be efficient. And it doesn't matter to the vendor whether or not his airplanes win a war or not.
John, I certainly agree with you on the Pentagon. I wrote some time ago about a report that showed from the time frame of about 1996 to 2012, I believe, alone, the Pentagon, spilled or lost on the order of $8 trillion. Nobody can account for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you go into a you've never been in a battle. You go to a battlefield, okay? You have somebody you want to bribe. And you give a corporal a bag full of money and tell him to go into this village and get the villagers to do so and so. So he goes, some corporal who probably got a sixth grade education. He takes his bag of money, he goes into the village, he starts passing it out. He doesn't know who he's giving it to, or they don't know why they're getting it, but they're getting the money. The money just goes. He comes back with an empty bag, and the villagers do what he expects. You know, I mean, that's the way America works.
Oh, indeed. But they say America certainly doesn't take care of its own. Increasingly, ordinary Americans are being marginalized and denied. When you talk about Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, John, I mean, the idea is either to privatize these operations or get rid of them entirely.
Well, yeah. I mean, but they're privatized now.
Oh, they absolutely are privatized now. I mean, literally, I mean, Social Security, our check shows up every month. I get direct deposit. Maybe you do as well, John. But
yeah.
you put it in the hands of Wall Street, and of course they'll want to manipulate people to get into the scams that they want to make lots of money on. So the system will be as imperfect as the system is now. It'll be ruined if Wall Street gets its hands on it, and the same with Medicare.
Yeah, sure it will. I mean, you know, it's not so much that the program will be ruined. Americans will be ruined. They're the ones that are going to die without care, suffer through old age and poverty. Nobody cares about the program, but it's the people that are going to be ruined. Wall Street doesn't care.
No, Wall Street wants to exploit the people to make all the bucks they can.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the system. There's an expression in the law that's rather rarely heard that I locked on to a couple of weeks ago that I'm thinking about using in a paper, but I haven't come up with the right paper for it yet. It's theft by deception.
Death by deception.
Yeah, theft by deception, and that is exactly what the American economy is. It's theft by deception. You know, every vendor deceives customers to get the customers' money, and I don't care who the vendor is. The big thieves are the bankers.
Yeah, the biggest thieves of all definitely are the bankers.
The one thing that about capitalism, I mean, capitalism has been well known to have numerous contradictions, making it to be an inoperable system. But one thing about capitalism that nobody mentions. Again, I want to write an article about this, but I can't find the right handle for it. Is that it's huge wealth in the hands of private individuals that allow them to corrupt governments. There is not a capitalist country in the world that doesn't have a corrupt government.
Yeah, it's true, John. And the bigger the capitalist system, the greater the corruption. I can't imagine any country more corrupt than America.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, nobody tells the American people that. There's not an economist in this country who has the backbone to stand up and say, "Damn, we're crooks." You know, that's what we are, and that's what advocating support for this economy makes us. It makes us aiders and abettors of thievery.
John, I think a classic example is the notion of banks that are too big to fail. And back in 2008, when the banks demanded, they literally demanded, of course, the Secretary of the Treasury then, Hank Paulson, was a former Wall Street banker, Goldman Sachs, and he led the campaign to bail out the banks, and the banks literally demanded and got, for starters, through the TARP program, Trouble Asset Relief Program, $750 billion, and the deal was, you either give us this money or we will take down the entire economy.
Yeah, and they took down the economy anyhow.
They took the economy down anyway, but they literally crashed the economy, crashed it worse than they already crashed it. So they got the TARP money, and they got a whole lot more. And by some estimates, they either got through direct handouts or loans something on the order of maybe up to $23 trillion. I mean, I can't conceive of numbers like this.
Well, I mean, you know, forget about the trillion. Just look at the 23. It's a criminal activity, Capitalism, business in a capitalistic world is a criminal activity, except that the criminals have bought themselves out of criminality.
And, of course, we're talking about the big boys. There are lots of local operations, anything from a local store run by a mom and pop to any kind of a small business operation, like what I was involved in all my working life. Even if we wanted to benefit the way the big boys do, there would be no way to be able to do it, and we certainly did not. And I think the local mom and pop operations don't either. I mean, there are always a lot of crooks around, big ones and small ones, but generally the small ones, they simply want to make a living and support themselves, and the big ones are the ones who game the system to benefit them at the expense of everybody else.
Well, yeah, like all generalizations, the generalization that the economy is theft by deception has its exceptions, but you know, the exceptions are so minor that they play no role in the way things work. You know, they just manage to get alongside of the thievery.
Well, there's an unholy alliance between government and big business, John, as we know, and each takes care of the other. The big corporations fund the political campaigns of the politicians, and for every buck they give them, I don't know how many they get back. They certainly get a heck of a lot back, more than they put in, and that really goes to the heart of the corrupt system here, the idea that the politicians are bought like toothpaste, which is exactly the way the system works, and if you don't get the money out of politics, there's no way to have an honest system. But you need to do a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, you have to do a whole lot more than that. You have to junk the capitalist system. You have to make capitalism illegal. But you know, we're not going to do that. I mean, we came close to doing it maybe in the late 1920s and early 1930s, but we're never going to get close to that, doing that again. People then realized that the system made us elements of transactions. We were to be bought and sold. A long time ago, we were bought. You know, that's all there is to it. There's no more selling. We were just bought. We're outside of the loop. We're just the mothers in the future generations will wail, the fruits of our loom, our wombs are cannon fodder.
Oh, indeed.
I have this expression, you know, the America consists of farm fodder, factory fodder, and cannon fodder.
And what I like to say often, and I did in one of my recent articles, maybe yesterday, that America was never a beautiful, and it certainly is not the land of the free and home of the brave. And it's just two of the big lies that circulate about America. The harm, no country in world history has done more harm to more people over a longer period of time than America. No country claiming democratic credentials is less democratic. And yet the myths proliferate, and too many people, even some intelligent people, by the deception about America, my country, whatever it is, I need to support it. What nonsense! I mean, America is a rogue killing machine that goes around exploiting people, murdering people, waging wars without end. You need to support this thing.
When Joe Biden last week said that we would follow ISIS to the gates of hell, I said, yeah, Joe, and we know how to get there because Bush and Cheney paved it.
That's exactly right.
I spent most of my life in the institution called academia in America.
Yes.
And it occurs to me that it's as corrupt as the banks.
Oh, there's lots of stuff wrong, John. I wrote about a University of Illinois professor, Stephen Salada, who was fired for supporting Palestinian rights.
I know about him, yeah.
And I wrote a follow-up article where he finally went public on the 9th of September, and I wrote another article with my comments, and mostly his comments going public, but my comments interspersed with them. And I would love to be able to contact him and get him on this program. Initially, he lay low, and I think he did it because he had such strong support in his comments. He said 18,000 people signed a petition supporting them, and they included colleagues, they included scholars, they included people around the world, friends, students, just an incredible response. And the University of Illinois shamelessly fired the guy for standing up for what's right. This is the kind of stuff that goes on in academia. So academia, the hollow grounds of academia are greatly exaggerated, John, and you've been there, you know.
Yeah, but you know, it occurred to me in thinking about it that every culture's institutions have as their function to promote the culture's myths. I mean, it happened in Athens in 400 B.C., and it's happening today. In Athens in 400 B.C., Socrates was executed merely for trying to get people to ferret out the truth, to think for themselves. But in doing that, he was calling into question the culture's myths. And that's exactly what's going on today. My dog here wants to join the conversation.
Well, we'll give him his say or her say. I think I have a few dogs who listen to this program. they can communicate with each other.
He at least has as much. To say as Obama.
Oh, indeed. Well, your dog doesn't like Obama either. Your dog and I would get along very well with each other. can I throw in one comment? I just got an email from Michelle Chosudovsky, who is the editor of Global Research, a website I urge listeners to follow on a regular basis. I certainly do, and my articles get posted there regularly. The article I wrote about 9/11 that I sent yesterday got posted early this morning. I called it 9/11, the mother of all big lies, and Michelle mentioned to me that it's getting thousands of readers. Well, nothing would make me happier than to hear that. That is really wonderful to hear, and it shows that things like this touch the right nerves. John, there was one article I wrote, and I mentioned it on this program, an open letter to New York Times editors. On one far less than popular website, it got around 50,000 readers. On one website alone, it certainly isn't one of the ones most read, because it touched a nerve about the corruption of the major media. And the idea that thousands of people would want to read what I or anybody else wrote about the truth of 9/11 shows that many, many people are on to the big lie, and they grasp material when they're able to get it to expose the big lie. And to me, that's one of the hopes that I would have, that eventually we'll spread the truth universally and do something to end the horrors that are going on. And the horrors post 9/11 alone, John, are just horrible, and they'll continue even worse. Well, I don't know about even worse, but they certainly will continue in what Obama announced last night.
Yeah, but you know, to get back to my point, and that is that the culture's institutions have as their function to maintain the culture's myths, and that's all that American universities do. Capitalism is a Western civilization myth. Science and technology as the salvation of human problems or human suffering is a capitalist myth. That's all it is. And our colleges and universities promote this stuff as though it were, deified truth.
As though no other system could possibly do the kind of good to humanity and planet Earth that capitalism does. That's another one of the big lies.
Yeah. It's a big lie. And all of this stuff is taught in our universities.
Oh, it sure is.
And none of them tolerate very much criticism.
John, it's been many years now, but years ago I read a book with a wonderful title. It was called Indian Givers. Like the expression, people know the expression Indian Givers. But the theme of the book was that so much of what has been handed down to humanity is because of what native peoples around the world gave to people today, the benefits that ordinary people around the world have because of what native people did, and they didn't do it for profit. They did it because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Was it this show? In a previous thing? No, it was an email. Somebody sent me an email about some guy saying that the profit motive can be used to promote morality. That is, all we have to do is make doing good things pay. And it was forwarded to me from a guy, I think, who listens to this show called He's got a PhD of some kind, but I don't know what kind. Edwin Young. He's online all the time. And I wrote him back a short message saying, there's a thing in a concept in America called transactional charity. That's charity given because of some return that the charitable person gets, like a building named after him or, something or other like that. I mean, it's transactional charity. You give money and you get something back. And I said, the religious people who believe in an afterlife are engaged in transactional religion. Okay? They're religious. They are religious because they believe they're going to get something back, like eternal life or something. And, I said, now, this guy is talking about transactional morality. You be moral, you get something back. I said, the trouble with all of these things is that they're done for the wrong reason. They're not done because they're right. And that's the trouble with the capitalist system. It's a system of transactions. That's all it is. You keep looking for what am I going to get out of this? And, a good person doesn't do that. He does right because it's right, not because of what he's going to get out of it. And that's, what I had to say about that concept of morality. Are you there?
Yeah, sure am.
And I think we ought to think more carefully about that. I mean, why do we fight wars? Well, the president tells us to protect our interests. He never tells us what those interests are. Nobody has ever told me what my interest in Iraq is, or Afghanistan is, or Syria is. I have no idea what interest I have there. I don't have any interest there any more than I have in Botswana. this idea of everything being transactional. You have to get something back, and we're going to get it back by taking it. I mean, that's basically what the wars are all about. You get something back by taking it. And and then some other person who wants something you have tries to get it back by taking it from us. It's a system of perpetual conflict, perpetual thievery, humanity can't can't come to any good by pursuing this. It just
Exactly, John. And the idea that you mentioned about making doing good pay, well, how does that compare? How can that ever compare to the amount of money that the crooks on Wall Street can steal? I mean, even if you had a do-gooder job that paid well into six figures, which certainly wouldn't be bad even in this day and age. I mean, the Wall Street crooks steal billions. Billions.
Yeah, billions. I mean, yeah, but you know, it wouldn't compare. I mean, if you're gonna try to get rich by doing good and getting rewarded for it, forget it, buddy. I mean, you know, there's no hope of ever doing that, of ever having that happen. No hope whatsoever. But you know, that's kind of dumb thing. I shouldn't be too hard on. On the internet, because I'm using it to I don't know what I'm using it for, but you know, that's the kind of dumb thing that all sorts of people stick on the internet, who never think, even sit down and think 10 minutes about what the stupidity of what they've said, you know, that's the way it goes. The trouble is that kind of stuff is read, too. It's read by a lot of people.
Well, it bothers me no end, John, that even people who understand a lot of the horrors going on do absolutely nothing to confront it, and everybody can...
That reminds me of another thing I've got.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking about miracles. What can we learn from miracles? And it occurred to me that... You know, miracles are funny things. A person, say the New Testament, you know, is accurate in its description of what Jesus did. You know, he raised people from the dead. He fed multitudes of people on two loaves and two fishes and that kind of thing. I said to myself, you know, well, how come he only raised three people from the dead? Why not more, you know? How come he only fed two multitudes of people on two fishes and two loaves? Why didn't he feed every hungry person in the Middle East or in Palestine or whatever? You know, and then it occurred to me that, you know, that is the Achilles heel of human life. We are able to do good, but unwilling to do what we can do.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And the funny thing about it is we even ascribe it to our mythical deities. Even our God can't. Even our God is unwilling to do what he has demonstrated he's able to do if you read the New Testament and believe it. I mean, and that's a telling discovery that even God is unwilling to do good. That's shattering.
Well, it's shattering. Of course, people can say anything that they want to say to absolve themselves for the things that they should do that they don't. And the only thing the Western ideology is take care of the privileged people, the moneyed interests, the war profiteers, and do it at the expense of everybody else. So the more that can be done to help these interests make more money and gain more power, that's the only thing that matters. And do it by exploiting other people or simply ignoring their needs. And this is what goes on, and it gets worse all the time.
Yeah, the thing about it, and I've said this in one of the papers that been out a long time, and I'm sure we've discussed on the show. The thing wrong with that whole economy is that it's all of this thievery, all of this accumulation of wealth, is done for no purpose. Nothing is ever done with the money that's accumulated. Nothing good is ever done with the money that's accumulated. Like, bad things are done with it, yeah.
John, another one of my guests on this program, John McMurtry, talks about using money to make more of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole capitalist idea, making money work.
And the sky's the limit, literally. I mean, it doesn't matter how much you have. The idea is to keep making more and more exponentially. And the more you make, I mean, it's coming out of the hides of ordinary people. That's the way our system works.
Yeah, and of course, the economists, you know, promote this myth that the money that's made then gets invested and it creates jobs for people. It doesn't get invested. You know, the Rockefeller family never created any businesses.
Well, I think there was a little oil there at one time.
Well, but I mean, they just stole the money in the oil business.
Well, they stole it. Absolutely right.
And never did anything with it. I mean, you know,
there are also bankers, Chase Bank, a Rockefeller Bank.
Yeah, but there are no businesses that employ people made by all of these this enormous wealth. Carnegie made a lot of money in the steel industry. How many Carnegie businesses are available today?
Well, that's a real business. That's a real business. I mean, it builds bridges, it builds automobiles, it builds things that people need. But the financial operations, I guess you need oil. Well, you need oil, but oil could easily be replaced if we wanted to go to natural sources. But that aside, the bankers, the only thing bankers do is make money that they benefit from, again, at our expense. They don't do anything constructive.
The point I was making is that once you acquire a lot of wealth, you don't do anything. You don't promote creating businesses to put people to work with it. You just use it to create more money.
Exactly.
You know, so none of these guys have. I mean, Steve Jobs, he died with an enormous fortune in his bank account. How many businesses were created with that fortune since he died? None. It's that way over and over and over again. The guy who created Microsoft by stealing an operating system from some buddies of his, you know, has an enormous fortune. How many businesses is he creating with that fortune that employ people? None.
Well, the bankers and the war profiteers are the ones I hate the most. The bankers, because they make money by stealing it, and the war profiteers make money by murdering millions of people and creating vast destruction and human misery. That's a hell of a business model, John.
Yeah. You know, it's as I said, theft by deception.
Oh, boy, indeed, and a whole lot more, too. It's a nightmarish condition that we live under, and sadly, America is the nexus of the horrors that go on, the human rights abuses and the war crimes that are committed, and the endless wars. One of my favorite expressions is simply to call them high crimes against peace. But genocidal crimes in the post-9/11 era alone, millions of people died at the hands of U.S. policies throughout the Middle East, in Eurasia, and other places that we don't really hear about. America has a proxy war going on in Yemen, in Somalia. Somalia goes back 30 years or so, maybe 25 years.
You know, I was looking for a place to put it in my paper that I sent to this morning, but I couldn't really find it. You know how kings are often named by what they do.
Richard the Lionhearted or something.
Yeah, something like that. You know, will Barack Obama someday be known as Barack the Assassin?
Well, he certainly should be known as that, and he certainly is an assassin. He's not the only warrior U.S. president. George Bush has his cross to bear, but Obama, literally, I mean, he came in on the mantle of ending the Afghan war. Instead, he escalated it and getting America out of the wars that it was in. And he, again, we haven't had a day of peace with him in office.
No, we haven't. And the thing that I put in the paper that interested me about. Because it exhibited the character of the people involved when the day they sent that assassination team to rub out
Bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden.
Well, of course, he was already dead, John, but they didn't tell us.
Yeah,
that.
but when they were told he the mission had been successful, they cheered.
They cheered. When Gaddafi was killed, and Hillary Clinton said, "We came, we saw, he died," quote unquote.
Yeah,
still remember that quote.
So what kind of people are these that cheer killing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
they're the kind of people who run America, John. We're just about out of time. A quick final thought.
No, really. Just take care of yourself, buddy. It's a hard life.
Oh, you too, John. Again, this getting old isn't what it's cracked up to be, but so far, so good. And I just hope I can keep going long enough to do a lot of the things I have on my mind to do. If I could get a number of good years left and be able to keep up the writing and the media work, that's really what I want to do most. I just can't imagine not spending my days doing anything else but this. And it bothered me so much that I couldn't do it when I was simply out of circulation. This is what matters most. I mean, saving humanity, John. What could be a greater mission than that?
No, we're not. We're trying, but we're not.
We're trying, John. We're trying. And to me, it's a priceless avocation. Nobody could pay me enough money to want to do what I'm doing now, free of charge. John, I look forward to getting you back. We'll do it again. I'll get back to you. Many thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, Steve.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Thanks, John.